Giving Tuesday is your chance to put your money where your heart is. While having that money up to double, the Sportage Health Foundation is matching up to $200,000 in donations to 26 nonprofits in Michigan's Copper Country. This year's nonprofit partners include Big Brothers Big Sisters, Sweet Town Trails Club, Superior Search and Rescue, Simple Kindness for Youth, Onondaga County Cancer Association, Omega House, and Poochak Fire and Rescue. See a full list of our partners and learn how to donate by visiting phfgive.org/givingtuesday.
Welcome once again to Copper Country Today. I'm Todd Van Dyke. Our program is brought to you by the Portage Health Foundation, getting ready for Giving Tuesday, which is coming up very, very soon. So find out more about that at their website at phfgive.org. Several weeks ago, I got a call from my mom, and I could tell just from the tone of her voice that she was very worried about something. And she explained to me that my little grandnephew, his name is Brooks, he lives in the Chicago area, was in the hospital. He had had kind of sniffles and a little cough, and his folks thought, well, you know, it's kind of one of those infant things. But then they thought, maybe better safe than sorry. So they took little Brooks to the doctor. And the doctor immediately sent him to the hospital, and within 24 hours, little Brooks was in intensive care and fighting something called RSV, and it was touch and go for the little guy. They said he could make it, he might not make it, and fortunately, he rallied, and he did make it, and he's back home, and he's doing just fine. But this was something I had never heard about, and all of a sudden, I was hearing about it everywhere, including here in Michigan and moving into the Upper Peninsula, RSV. And so I thought maybe we'd better do a program about this and let parents know, and others as well, what this new virus is and how to combat it and spot it and deal with it. So Tony Malik, a hospitalist at Aspirus, joins me on the program here. Tony, welcome and thank you for your time.
Hi, Todd. Thanks for having me on. I really appreciate it. This is a pretty important topic this time of year. And I'm glad to hear that your grandnephew's doing better as well.
Yeah, it was scary there for a while. And one of the ironic things about it was, you know, he's in Chicago. There are hospitals all over Chicago, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
They could find no neonatal intensive care room for him closer than Madison, Wisconsin.
Yeah, and that has been a big issue in regards to hospital beds and even NICU beds across the upper Midwest. That seems to be an ongoing battle that we're facing, you know, ever since COVID started. You know, there's been a slew of issues because of that, you know, from staffing issues to the amount of patients that are coming through the ER in these heavier populated areas. And it's kind of weighing down on the system a little bit because there's been so much change and a lot of people leaving the medical field. So I think there's a lot of different reasons why we're seeing these problems.
Yeah, because that's kind of scary. Unfortunately, they got lucky at the last moment, a swing bed did open up near them, so they didn't have to send him up to Madison, Wisconsin. But you'd think that if you could find an intensive care bed for a child any place, it would be in Chicago. That's kind of a scary prospect that we're running short of these types of essential services.
Yeah, it is scary, and we have been seeing that more and more, like I mentioned, and I think it has a lot to do with just the areas being so heavily populated, like Chicago. Even though they have a ton of resources down there, more so than we have up here in the UP, they become quickly inundated, and it can really cause a lot of people to not get the treatment they need, or having to wait a particularly long time just to get a hospital bed, as you guys just went through firsthand.
So explain to me what this is, RSV. Is this something new or has it been around for a while?
So RSV is a respiratory syncytial virus, and it is not new. It's been around for a very long time. I think it's kind of fell by the wayside the past few years because of COVID, with all the extra masking and not having people gather as much, and schools being closed off and on. It really took a backseat to the COVID infection, which was new and kind of running rampant. So I think with all those extra measures in place, we saw a drop off of RSV the past few years. But now that things are getting back to some semblance of normal, we're starting to see an uptick in RSV, or at least it's higher than it had been the past few years. And there have been multiple reasons for that. Kids are going back to school. People are gathering now as they were before. And it can be spread very easily. And you can get repeated infections as well. So a past infection does not guarantee any immunity going forward.
And because it's a virus, I'm going to suspect that maybe there are limited ways of treatment. You can't throw an antibiotic at it.
Correct. Yeah, there's no specific treatment for RSV. And typically it's treated symptomatically. A lot of people will have had RSV in their lifetime. Unfortunately, it affects the very young and very old in a detrimental manner. As you notice with your grandson, they can quickly become sick and go downhill very quickly, especially the 0 to 6 month age, and then the older population as well. They can end up on a ventilator very quickly or requiring oxygen, and it can be a scary process to go through, especially for a young child.
So this is not something, because I've been hearing it in the news, and particularly based to young children, this is not something that is just limited to young children then?
Correct. And as I mentioned, just about everybody has had RSV at some point, but usually for a healthy adult or young adult, it really just presents as a cold. The people who really get into trouble, as I mentioned, are these young children, 0 to 6 months old. And a lot of times for premature children and children who may have chronic medical issues during that time period from 0 to 6 months, it is important to watch for those signs and symptoms and seek treatment if they're not improving over a certain amount of time.
So how do you know when you need to seek treatment? I mean, my niece and her husband looked at little Brooks, and their first thought was, well, he's a little kid, his nose is running, and he's coughing. Little kids do this a lot. How do you know that it's gotten to the point where you need to have it looked at?
That's a good question. There are symptoms that pop up, and they can seem mild at first. If they're in that age range and that 0 to 6 month age, and they're not getting better after a week, or they start to, decline over that time period, if their fevers aren't being controlled, if they seem like they're having a hard time breathing, if they're not eating or drinking as much as normal, then at that point, I think it would be a good idea for them to be seen by their pediatrician.
So what about then an older person, maybe someone who's living on their own, monitoring their own health, or maybe somebody who is an older relative that you're helping to be a caregiver for? How do you know when they are at the point where they're not just suffering from a little allergy attack or a little cold?
Sure, that's another great question. Sometimes it kind of depends on how much you can tolerate, but at the same time, when you get into the older population, 65 and above, chronic medical issues can sometimes come about more regularly. And those are the types of people we tend to worry about a little bit more, because they may not be able to fight off this virus that may only cause you or I to have a mild cold. For these people who can't fight these infections off, it becomes much more than that. And it's kind of the same thing. If they don't seem to be doing well, if they don't seem to be thriving, if they're having trouble breathing, if they're having these symptoms that aren't being controlled at home and continue to get worse, then at that point it would be a good idea to be seen.
You mentioned something, Dr. Tony Malik, that I'd been wanting to talk about with you, in that the last couple of years we've been very careful about spreading disease in our society. Many people have chosen to wear masks. Many people are sanitizing, washing their hands, isolating themselves a little bit more, not only in regards to this RSV, but in terms of some of the other things that we normally deal with in the winter, just regular colds, influenza and such. I am hearing that we might be in for a bumper crop of that this year because we haven't been exposed to it so much recently. Is that true?
It could be true, and we do see that. We have been seeing that happen in these bigger areas, and as I mentioned, people are now starting to get back to normal and may not be masking as much or maybe gathering more, which is, you know, which is great. But at the same time, you know, we have to be cognizant that there are these other infections that can happen. And some of them are hard to prevent, especially in school-age children. But just as you mentioned, wearing a mask if you're not feeling well or you're out in a large public gathering, good hand hygiene, frequently washing your hands, staying home when you're sick to try and reduce the spread, and all of those things are going to be helpful in mitigating any sort of upper respiratory disease, especially around this time of year.
Because I suppose if there is an upside to having these little infections running around is that it does help build up our immune system. Every time a virus comes into our body, immune cells are developed to try to fight it off. If we haven't had those infections, I suppose we're a little bit more at risk, aren't we?
We are. And some of these viruses, it doesn't matter. Just like RSV, you can have repeated infections with RSV as there's no immunity gained after having an infection.
Is there any type of preventive measure that can be taken? I understand there is no vaccine for it.
Correct. There's not a vaccine at this point for RSV. There is something for premature children if they do have an RSV infection from the 0 to 6 month age. They do use something called Synergist for these higher or at-risk pediatric patients, which is an injection that's given during these higher months of RSV. But that's only in a small window and for a small population of children. So other than that, there's not really anything to help prevent other than, as I mentioned, good hygiene and staying home when you're sick.
You mentioned a season for RSV. Does that follow the same kind of seasons we typically see from other virus and viral infections?
It follows close behind to the influenza season. So October to around February or March, with the peak being around January to February. That's typically what we see with RSV.
Have we seen it specifically being a problem in the Copper Country?
It can become a problem. I think up here in the Copper Country, there's this innate quality of having a little bit of social distancing just because of the weather and not being heavily populated. And I think we tend to get things on the later end compared to these bigger cities like Chicago. Right now, they're in the thick of it with some of this, with RSV and influenza, and beds are being occupied because of that. We lag behind a little bit in the copper country. So if they're getting in October and November, we might start to see an uptick in January and February.
Well, we certainly saw that with the COVID-19 pandemic, which was so closely followed. We got actually to learn some things about how this diseases move around. And it was downstate, and we're all smug in the UP saying, hey, we don't have it. And then all of a sudden, we had it too. It takes a while for these things to migrate here, I guess.
It does, and I guess that can be a good thing, you know, being so secluded up here. You know, it does take a while for things to travel up here.
So with RSV, if you have it, how do you diagnose it? Is there a test that can be taken by people at home, or do you have to go into a healthcare system to find out?
Typically, you would have to go into a healthcare system if there's any clinical suspicion that you have RSV, such as, you know, upper respiratory symptoms like cough, cold, fevers, chills, or lower respiratory symptoms, shortness of breath. You can also develop a cough or wheezing. at that point, you should be seen. And they can do viral cultures or something called a PCR test, which is a blood test that checks for a multitude of things, including RSV.
So I'm at home, maybe I think I've got it. My family is around. Do I need to isolate? What do I need to do as a family to make sure that perhaps I don't pass it on to everybody else? Or is it inevitable that I do that?
In a household, sometimes it can be inevitable. But if you're taking the proper precautions and people are practicing, and I keep saying this, good hand hygiene, that's always going to be helpful. Sometimes it is inevitable, especially if you're a caretaker of a young child. You're going to be exposed to it. And based on your comfort level, some people will wear masks in the house, and it all depends on your comfort level and what your health status is, too. So if you're an immunocompromised adult taking care of a child who has RSV, it might be wise to mask up while you're taking care of that child. And it may not be possible, but taking those proper precautions for yourself can go a long way in helping to prevent the spread of that.
Yeah, our recent wintry weather, Dr. Tony Malik, has certainly reminded us all that we're heading into the winter illness season, and that goes for RSV apparently now, and also for colds and influenza, and perhaps COVID-19 will become one of those seasonal things as well. Give me some general guidelines for looking at our kids. When do we send them to school? When do we keep them home? When do we bring them to the doctor?
Sure. Yeah. And I think there's this common misconception that the winter is actually or cold weather actually can make you sick. Probably not. I think what it has to do with is that the cold weather kind of brings more people inside. And in these closed circulated air environments in a closed environment, you're more apt to catching something that somebody else might have. In regards to what to watch out for, the common things that happen around this time of year, as you mentioned already, COVID is kind of one of those newer things that seems to be a seasonal issue as well, RSV, influenza. But there's also things like croup and pneumonia, strep throat, or even the common GI bug or stomach flu. So if your kid is sick, if they're running a temperature, if they are not eating or drinking as much as they normally do, if they seem more fatigued or just a little bit more listless than normal, it might be a good idea to have those kids stay home so they can rest up and get better and then not spread that to their classmates or teachers.
This used to be a mark of pride. I wore it as a badge of honor that I never missed a day of high school. I went when I was sick. I went with, by golly, I was a trooper. I was there every day. I probably got some people sick, didn't I?
There's a potential, and that happens in school. And like you were saying, that helps build immunity for some of these things, you know, like chicken pox and things like that, where you can develop immunity. But some of these things are, you know, there's no way around that. But yeah, that's just what happens. That's kind of a, like you said, a badge of honor or a rite of passage in some of these schools. But yeah, I think in today's day and age, it's probably better to be safe than sorry, just with the amount of people that have been sick recently the past couple of years with COVID, repeated COVID infections, it's no fun being sick. So if you can avoid spreading that unnecessarily, that would probably go a long way.
Well, and unfortunately, keeping the kids home can provide a challenge for some families, because if it's a one-parent household and that parent is working, two-parent household and both parents are working, where's the caregiver?
Yeah, that is a great question, and sometimes there's no way around it, and sometimes you have to go to school because there's nobody at home to care for you. As a, you know, both parents are working, or as you mentioned, a single parent household, and there's no way around it. I feel for people who can't, you know, who have to kind of struggle through that, and the kids have to go to school sick, and that's a tough situation sometimes for sure. I don't have a great answer for that.
I'm not sure anybody has come up with one yet.
Yeah.
It is, on one hand, a bit of a relief to be talking to a doctor about something other than COVID-19. It seems to have monopolized monopolized our medical conversation for the last 2.5 years at this point. But it hasn't exactly gone away. And give me an update as to what you're seeing on that front.
Sure, yeah. And I don't think COVID's going to go away. I think it's here to stay, and it seems to be kind of following the same pattern as influenza in that sense, except we've been seeing COVID more throughout the year, here and there. As with influenza, it's usually within a short window in the fall and winter. But COVID has been upticking recently, definitely not to the degree it was last year or in 2020. But yeah, there's still some areas where COVID is spreading, and it spreads pretty quickly. I haven't seen it as much as in the schools. Last year, we saw quite a bit of school closures and people getting it in large groups, and just not seeing that much this year. But that could just be the trend, as you know, we're late to the party with a lot of these things. So it could be in the horizon. But let's see. Fingers crossed that. You know, I think people did a great job of taking it seriously and trying to do what they can to prevent it from getting worse or spreading.
One of the early speculations about COVID is that it might follow the same pathway that a lot of other viruses have followed, that over a period of time, the more mild versions of it would prevail, the more virulent versions would kind of fall by the wayside because they tend either to kill their hosts or to have their hosts hospitalized and isolated so it doesn't get spread as much. Have we seen COVID cases become progressively milder?
I believe so. I think they are becoming more virulent, so they're easier spread, but they're not as severe. And people are getting it, and sometimes they don't even know that they have it. And that can be a good thing and a bad thing, right? Because if they don't know they have it, they could spread it to somebody that could potentially get sicker than them. But back to your point, yeah, I think it has become milder. And I'm seeing less and less inpatient stays due to COVID. They're still there, but definitely not to the degree that they were.
So it's certainly something we still need to be aware of, but perhaps not as paranoid as we were a couple of years ago. And I suppose it settles into something similar to this RSV thing that we started out talking about, something that is potentially serious that many people pass on that they don't even know they have, but all of a sudden somebody gets it and go whammy and we hear about it.
And I think it is following in that same trajectory as well. So it is something to be cognizant of and to take seriously if it does occur. But I think if you're taking the proper precautions and practicing good hygiene and just taking care of yourself in general, getting plenty of rest, eating good healthy foods, trying to get as much exercise as you can, even though that might include mall walking, you know, because walking outside this time of year can be treacherous as well. But all those things can be beneficial and to help you, even if you do get sick, get over it a lot quicker.
Yeah, it does you absolutely no good to avoid RSV if you get run over by a car that goes out of control on an icy street, I suppose.
I guess so.
And there are indoor opportunities, and there are walk opportunities. The mall, I think, allows that. And what is it, the South Range Village Hall, I think, upstairs there, I think they open it up during the winter for walking, that kind of thing. And there are some health clubs in the area and facilities that offer opportunities to stay fit and healthy as well. Let's kind of recap this RSV thing, because this was new to me, and I'm sure it's new to a number of people. Again, it can affect everybody, but the most at risk are the very young and the older folks?
Correct. Yeah, the very young and the very old. So if you're looking at two opposite ends of the spectrum, those are the populations that are going to be mostly severely affected by RSV.
And if you see those symptoms, the runny nose, the perhaps lack of appetite, some of the other things that come along with that, get in touch with your physician. Will your physician laugh and snicker at you if you come in and he says, "Oh, it's just a little cold, don't worry about it"?
No, not at all. Not at all. It's encouraged, because you want to make sure that you're not going to be contagious or that it's not something more serious. Obviously, if it is mild, then you're probably okay at home. If you have any questions, reach out to your provider and ask. You're not going to get laughed at or ridiculed. It's a good thing to ask questions if you don't know or if you're unsure.
Excellent. Dr. Tony Malik is a hospitalist at Aspirus. Thank you for your time and for your insights, doctor.
Thanks a lot. Stay warm, drive safely, and hopefully we won't see you in the hospital.
Hopefully not, and we'll be back in a moment as Copper Country Today continues.